I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome back to Radio Times. Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, performed by the Ballet Russe, had its debut in Paris 100 years ago in May 1913. There was a near riot in the concert hall. Was it the avant-garde choreography or music that the audience found so objectionable? In spite of that inauspicious start, The Rite of Spring is considered one of the great concert works of the 20th century, which has influenced composers and other artists. It's one of my favorite pieces of music. We asked David Ludwig to join us on Radio Times to discuss its importance and to take apart sections of the composition, which feels a bit heretical, but nonetheless, we're happy to have David Ludwig back with us. He's a composer, artistic chair of performance and composition faculty at the Curtis Institute of Music here in Philadelphia. And David, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, I'm really pleased to be here, Marty.
So one of your favorite pieces of music as well?
Absolutely.
Well, we have spent the last 48 hours listening to a lot of The Rite of Spring many, many times. And I have to say, it still sounds fresh and exciting. There are times I listen to it, I feel like I almost want to jump out of my skin.
Well, you know, I think that's a quality common to great pieces of music, that they are timeless, that they are forever evocative for us. So I agree. When I hear this piece, it's as modern and avant-garde and even scandalous as when it was first written.
Now, it was written for a ballet, and it's interesting to think of this as a standalone piece of music, but of course a piece of music to accompany a ballet.
Yeah, well, all of Stravinsky's pieces, all of his ballets absolutely stand on their own as music. And he wrote them working really hand-in-hand with the choreographers and producers and directors, everyone involved in the production of the ballet. And so these pieces absolutely stand as individuals in their own artistic merits.
And the choreography, the famed Vaslav Nijinsky was the choreographer, and impresario Sergei Diaghilev?
Diaghilev.
And he was, I guess, the man behind this creation, yes?
Yeah. Well, Stravinsky was still a pretty young guy. He was about 30 years old, and he had written already two ballets in Paris. One was The Firebird, which he wrote in 1909, and he was commissioned by Diaghilev. Diaghilev sought him out because his Ballet Russe, or the Russian ballet, which he produced and was in charge of and managed, they had been criticized because they weren't doing really avant-garde stuff, really novel, cutting-edge things. And so Diaghilev sought out who's really doing cool music right now, who's out there. And through his Russian connections, he really discovered Stravinsky, was impressed by his music, gave him a commission for The Firebird. So with The Firebird in 1909, Stravinsky became famous, and people were really impressed by this music. It was still a little derivative of his teacher, Rimsky-Korsakov, but, I mean, it was an unbelievable piece and still is. And then he wrote Petrushka in 1911, 2 years after that, which is basically about a character that's a little bit like Punch from Punch and Judy, about a puppet. A bit of a scandalous piece as well, but all it did was it reestablished him on the Parisian stage. The thing that made him move from famous to infamous was this Rite of Spring. Mm. That it came from an idea that he had several years before, and the subject matter, the sets, the dancing, and of course the music was very shocking to people in 1913.
About human sacrifice, right? A pagan ritual.
Yeah, exactly. The subtitle of the Rite of Spring is Scenes from Pagan Russia in Two Acts. Pagan in the both pre-Christian sense of the word, but also in the original sense of the word, which is from the countryside. And so he wanted to capture some of this, what he perceived to be the brutal truths of Mother Nature and country life. And so a virgin from the village has to dance herself to death in sacrifice to the gods of spring so that they look benevolently upon the village.
Well, let's play the very beginning of The Rite of Spring, and all this hour we're going to be playing selections from or excerpts from a 1992 recording of the Cleveland Orchestra conducted by Pierre Boulez. And this is The Adoration of the Earth, the very famous opening of Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. Again, the Adoration of the Earth, the very beginning of Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. And David, there's a lot going on in that 2.5 minutes there.
There is a lot going on. And you know, that bassoon solo has become so iconic. Every bassoonist on the planet learns that piece. And Stravinsky himself said something like, you know, if I knew it was going to become that easy, I would have raised it by a half step every 10 years, you know, just to make it a little more challenging. You know, from a practical point of view, in the very opening, he's evoking a kind of folk singing from he spent a lot of vacation time growing up in the Russian countryside. Mm. And so he heard a lot of this folk singing, which was at the extreme ends of singers' voices, very ornamented, embellished melodies. And so actually, when you think about that, the bassoon solo suddenly makes a lot of sense. It's taken pretty literally from a Lithuanian wedding song. And Stravinsky actually lifts a lot of folk music for this piece. It's very important for him. And it attaches the music to the theme, really, of rural life and this human sacrifice.
In fact, as we were listening to that, you said the word alien. I mean, it sounds alien.
It really does. And, you know, people hearing this piece for the first time who don't know better, you know, what instrument is that? And that must have immediately gotten the attention of Parisians. There's a kind of apocryphal story. There are a lot of apocryphal stories about this piece. It's a little bit like Woodstock, actually. But there's
everyone was there, right?
Everyone was there.
No one can remember.
Right. And so, you know, part of that, Saint-Saëns, the composer, who would have been a bit older then, heard that opening and stormed out immediately. Stravinsky later said that's impossible. He wasn't even there. So, you know, it's just one of those things, but it's certainly was very shocking for people to hear this open a piece.
Well, while people are still sort of holding on to what we just played, I want to do a pickup. And this is, again, the continuation of the Adoration of the Earth. Just a quick setup, if you could, for us, David.
Sure. Well, what we're going to hear is the music's going to progress into a land of great abstraction. And if you look at this page, it's black. It's just full of notes. And we can talk about it after, but it's pretty wild.
Well, let's listen. when I talk about wanting to jump out of my skin. I mean, there's just something about that sound.
It's very unique. And if you look at the score, you see that everyone is playing their own individual line. And that, for an orchestra piece, is pretty rare, because usually when we hear orchestra music, there's usually only two or three things going on, a melody, a harmony, some kind of accompaniment for us to follow. But here, everyone's kind of doing their own thing. Everyone's having their own conversation. And I guess in art, it reminds me a little bit of Alexander Calder's Mobiles, where you have these individual objects all rotating at different speeds, but you're looking at the whole piece. And so you can choose to listen to this in individual parts or listen to the whole thing at once, but it's very abstract. And if you think about 1913, the beginning of Cubism, the start of some free association in writing and
Freud.
And dance. Freud, absolutely, yeah. All of it kind of clicks together, and you realize that, you know, this is really where it's coming from. It's a move toward great abstraction.
About a minute away from our first break here, but what's interesting, as you said, he drew from folk songs and probably folk dances, so you have something very traditional, and then he's revolutionized it. I mean, he's playing with all these traditional musical themes.
Yeah, you've gotten to the core of what this piece is about. It's really about meeting the ancient with the modern.
And the kind of tension, I guess, that ensues, right?
The great clash there, and a lot of the angst and agita that people felt at the turn of the century really manifests itself.
And just a quick question, was the ballet choreographed before he started writing, or was...
He did it alongside, and he started writing it and actually spent quite a time on the score.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, celebrating its 100th birthday this year in the year 2013, written in 1913. David Ludwig is with the Curtis Institute of Music. He's also a composer as well. We're going to play some more music and talk some more about this extraordinary piece of music, in my humble estimation. And we'll be back after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Drexel supports WHYY. If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in a research study called the ENACT Project at Drexel University. This year-long weight loss study is funded by the National Institutes of Health and is designed to help adult men and women lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings is included. For more information, 215-762-8400. 215-762-8400.
On behalf of everyone at WHYY, thank you for making our quiet campaign a success. Because of your generosity, there are no live fundraising breaks today. However, our spring membership campaign starts tomorrow, and we're still a long way off from the overall goal. Help us deliver the shows you love every day on WHYY-FM. Visit whyy.org/support. Thanks again for buying back the first day of the campaign and for making WHYY where you go to know.
Hector Ruiz grew up in a small border town in Mexico where he used to shine shoes to help his parents make ends meet. But he grew up to become one of the biggest names in the world of technology. Now the former Fortune 500 CEO joins us to pass on some wisdom and his take on one of the biggest lawsuits his industry ever faced. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, essentially celebrating the 100th anniversary of Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. And I guess, again, our guest is David Ludwig. He's a composer, artistic chair of performance and composition at the Curtis Institute of Music here in Philadelphia. I do want to play some more, but I want to also talk about his use of rhythms. We hear counterpoint, and I think that helps add to the excitement and the tension and the energy in this piece.
Yeah, absolutely. His use of rhythm was absolutely revolutionary for the time. A lot of it is inspired by Slavic folk music, the irregular rhythms. And so we're used to, traditionally in Western music, things being divided into three or four. Three like a waltz. Most songs that we hear are in 4-4. They're in four beats per measure. Stravinsky just blew that up. And so every other bar, it seems, he's changing the time signature. He's changing the groupings and patterns. And as you say, that gives it a tremendous amount of momentum and energy and vivaciousness. And it was a challenge for the dancers. They had over 100 rehearsals and still had problems. Apparently, at the premiere, Nijinsky himself was standing in the wings calling out numbers
shouting
to them. But, you know, the use of rhythm is one thing that makes this piece really iconic. It's something no one had come close to. Maybe Stravinsky himself, Petrushka, was kind of a halfway point. But with this piece, no one had heard music like this. And he's really trying to capture what he knew would sound very exotic to Parisian listeners at the time, who were very fascinated. There's this movement at the time, primitivism, and it's a very patronizing term, but this obsession with what contemporaries viewed as the kind of pure, true life of, you know, early people or tribal people. And that's very interesting to Stravinsky. And so he wants to capture that in the very primal rhythm here.
Did he want to shock people? I mean, was that part of his intention as well?
I'm sure it was part of where he was coming from, because he, you know, Stravinsky was a great businessman too, and very aware of public perception. Diaghilev especially as well, his kind of partner in crime, really kind of, you know, kept nudging people on and pushing things into the more scandalous direction.
I do want to play another piece, but one of the words that I ran across that Stravinsky reportedly said to describe this was architectonic, mm-hmm. Not anecdotal. The idea that it had this kind of structure and form to it rather than just storytelling.
Right. Well, he claimed there was no plot, that it was all based, it all came out of a vision that he had of a circle of elders, village elders standing around a young girl dancing herself to death. But, you know, the truth is there is a narrative in the piece, and it starts with, you know, these young girls kind of celebrating the spring, and then one of them is abducted, and she's chosen. She's the chosen one who's going to dance herself to death, and there's no question about it. There's no remorse. This is just, you get the sense, this is how it's always been done and always will be done.
Let's play another excerpt from The Rite of Spring, from the first part, The Adoration of the Earth. And this is Dances of the Young Girls. It's from a 1992 recording of the Cleveland Orchestra conducted by Pierre Boulez. Let's listen. Thank you. again, an excerpt of The Rite of Spring. That's the dances of the young girls. And David, we were talking about the rhythms, and I think we really hear that in this excerpt.
Yeah, you know, if you look at the reproduction or the revival of the ballet, this is where the curtain comes up. Suddenly these chords happen, and they're very crunchy. They're very crunchy, earthy
Your word,
chords.
Right?
It's true, yeah. Well, it's probably, I mean, they sound crunchy to me. And something that Stravinsky did that he borrowed from Debussy, but then pushed forward, was the idea of combining chords together, chords that wouldn't normally be heard together. And so there's a great, great clashing effect. And these are sounds people never heard before, but that's also coupled with this rhythm. And the rhythm, the accents on the rhythm, are all placed in places that we would never expect them to be. And so that, coupled with the choreography, which was very earthy, crunchy choreography by Nijinsky, he wanted to convey a sense of earthiness, a sense of the primal and most basic. And so most ballet is, of course, very graceful and turned outward toward the audience. This ballet was not. It had, when the curtain opened, there's a ring of the young girls together, all dressed like Native Americans. That was for, you know, the Parisian audiences as exotic and alien as it got. And they dance, if you watch a recreation, they dance in this way, stomping about. And their knees are always bent, and it's very clunky. And this was very hard on the dancers, but also the absolute opposite of what Parisians had come to expect from the ballet that had been for hundreds of years part of their tradition.
Well, and there is, I guess, to this day, 100 years later, some controversy because the audience reacted. I mean, it sounds like they were near fistfights in the audience, and certainly a lot of shouting and laughing. And the question was, were they laughing at the choreography? Were they laughing at the music? What didn't they like?
Yeah, if you spend a little time online or reading about this, you'll see a lot of very conflicting opinions. And in that way, it's kind of like Woodstock, too. It was premiered, it was May 29th, but a very hot day in the Champs-Élysées Theater right in Paris, and which was a brand new building, still used today. And the audience was a mix of Parisian artists and cognoscenti, but also a lot of out-of-towners who had been brought in to see this. And some of the members of the audience, Debussy was there, Gertrude Stein, Picasso, Jean Cocteau, Marcel Proust. I mean, it was a who's who. And right from the opening, some boos and hisses and noises of displeasure came about with the bassoon solo. But some of the authors you read contend that the reviews of the time said that the piece was a failure because of the choreography and that you couldn't even hear the music because the protest and then counter-protest, all the people supporting Stravinsky who were saying, shut up, I just want to hear the music, you know, that made an incredible racket in there. So some people say it almost came to blows. That the police had to be called. Some people say, look, this was just a lot of people being bullies. But one thing we do know is that Stravinsky himself got up and left.
Wow.
He was sitting in the fourth or fifth row, and probably out of a combination of anger and fear, he got up and went backstage. He was very furious that people were reacting this way to a piece he had spent a couple of years on. But this, you know, it shows our experience as listeners if classical music has changed quite a bit in the past 100 years. People weren't afraid to voice their displeasure and show it back then.
Would it be fair to say, though, over time and maybe within a year, that the music by itself, maybe without the choreography, was more appreciated, more understood?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The Parisians, it got in their ears. And even by the end of this performance, they had kind of settled down, and they had to be called out four or five times to take bows. Mm. And so it was a success even then. But soon the piece became really notorious, and it was performed again a couple years later by the conductor Monteux in Monte Carlo and was a huge success. And so evermore after that, it was played and taken very seriously.
Well, let me play another selection from Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. And again, we are celebrating its 100th anniversary or birthday this year. And David Ludwig from the Curtis Institute of Music is our guest. And we have been playing selections from a 1992 recording of the Cleveland Orchestra conducted by Pierre Boulez. And again, this is from part one of the Rite of Spring. And this is Procession of the Wise Elder. Let's listen. Again, that's a Procession of the Wise Elder from Part 1, The Adoration of the Earth, from Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, again celebrating its 100th birthday or anniversary this year. David, you had talked earlier about the fact that early on, or 100 years ago, this was unusual to play this kind of rhythm, these kinds of notes, that some of the pages were just sort of black with notes. How about today? Is this considered a challenging piece for an orchestra?
Many orchestras play this piece, and it is a part of what we would call the repertoire, standard repertoire. It's still a tough piece, and people still spend a lot of time practicing through this, even though it's been in our ears for 100 years.
Well, I should give a bit of a shout-out here to the Philadelphia Orchestra, because it had its American premiere performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Leopold Sikowski. This was 1922. There was a recording made a couple of years later, and it seemed that Sikowski was a fan, a supporter of Igor Stravinsky's work.
He was. You know, he was a really ardent supporter of contemporary music, and part of what makes him a really great artist and conductor is he knew the pieces that would have staying power, and he stood by them, even though at the time people were saying, you know, you got to be crazy to be playing this. But he stood by them and would not back down, and eventually recorded this piece.
Well, in fact, I ran across a memo. This is from the Philadelphia Orchestra, from Arthur Judson to Leopold Sikowski, and it's in anticipation of its radio broadcast. And Arthur Judson says to Sikowski, "I'm frankly afraid of the Stravinsky number on the second program. Millions of people who have never heard an orchestra are going to listen in. They're going to be greatly pleased with the first number, but after 5 minutes of the Stravinsky, they're going to say, 'Oh, hell,' and turn off the radio."
Yeah, well, first of all, I love the 1930s, 40s practice of calling everything numbers. I think that's
exactly
great. Oh, I love that number. But, you know, Sikowski was taking a risk, but he didn't care. Right. He felt really strongly about this, and people reacted positively, actually. This was a risk. This is one of the first big radio broadcasts for that orchestra. Part of what really helps define him is how strongly he stood by music he believed in.
And Sikowski writes back to Arthur Judson saying, "I'm sure what you say about the Sacre de Stravinsky or the Rite of Spring is also true, but I feel it is the greatest work of our time and for that reason should be played."
And isn't that amazing that, you know, just a decade or two after this piece is premiered in the United States, he has the foresight to realize that, in fact, is the greatest piece of their generation, of their century, really.
Well, and we can't forget Fantasia, the Philadelphia Orchestra, and Stokowski conducting.
Well, it's such an iconic movie that, you know, so many people grow up with. Even today, you know, I have a lot of students who talk about first hearing, right. You know, The Rite of Spring in Fantasia. Stokowski recorded that. It's a fabulous inclusion in that movie. Well, it's an absolutely wonderful movie, but this is the dinosaur scenes, yes. as you watch the dinosaurs kind of dying. I think Stravinsky at the time was happy to get the paycheck. Later on, was not thrilled with it being kind of diced up for this, for the movie, but the fact is we probably wouldn't have heard it otherwise. So I think it's just wonderful that everything came together to put this relatively new, mm-hmm. very experimental piece in this movie that millions of people have seen.
And why has Igor Stravinsky been called an enfant terrible?
Well, certainly, you know, in Paris, when he was pretty young, coming out with this piece, he was absolutely that. You know, like a Picasso. His career is actually very aligned with Picasso's, actually, in terms of changing styles and techniques and being incredibly daring and getting a lot of notoriety early on.
And being a difficult person as well?
For sure. But he was something, you know, he would probably say he knows what he wants. And he absolutely knew what he wanted. He would play this piece as he was writing it for guests, including Monteux and Diaghilev. He played a two-piano version with Debussy. Mm. And he would just have people over and, you know, say, I don't even quite know how to write all this music I'm hearing down. It's so wild. And Monteux called him...
he was a conductor, yeah.
Yes, the conductor of the premiere of The Rite of Spring called him the crazy Russian, which is pretty great.
A term of endearment?
Unclear, but certainly Stravinsky came off that way. Everyone thought that he was just mad to be writing music like this.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation, more music as well. We are celebrating the 100th anniversary of Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. David Ludwig is our guest from the Curtis Institute of Music. He's a composer as well, and we've been listening to selections from The Rite of Spring, so do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Camp Hill's special school with day and residential options is a community committed to the care and education of children ages 4 through 21 with mild to severe intellectual disabilities. Camp Hill's curriculum includes music, art, drama, the sciences, life and social skills development, animal husbandry, and horticulture. Camp Hill's special school is hosting an open house at their Chester County campus on April 27th. Details at camphillspecialschool.org.
On the next Fresh Air, David Sedaris returns. He has a new book called Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. Sedaris writes about his life, but...
There's the you that you present to the world, and then there's, you know, of course, the real one. And if you're lucky, there's not a huge difference between those two.
We'll maybe get to some of the differences. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Colleges are scrambling to meet a future need for drone experts, and kids are flocking to those schools to major in drone studies. Also, a change of pace, poet and Fresh Air commentator Lloyd Schwartz on some new voices for National Poetry Month. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with David Ludwig, and we are playing selections, excerpts from Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. This is from Part 2, The Sacrifice, a glorification of the chosen victim from a 1992 recording of the Cleveland Orchestra conducted by Pierre Boulez. Let's listen.
Thank you.
again, glorification of the chosen victim from part two, the sacrifice of Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. And David, I don't know even know where to begin, but those drums.
Oh, it's so cool.
it is cool.
You know, like I was saying before, most of the time in music, bars are grouped into three or four. This bar has 11 beats in it, and each beat is this colossal drum hit, and it just gets into your bones. There has been choreography of this where there are the 12 virgins on stage, 11 surrounding the one who's going to be sacrificed. So on each hit, one falls away until she's the only one standing.
Oh my goodness!
But it's just a kind of rocking moment there. It's really raucous, and I know of no other moment like that in music, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
It's a very, very unique moment and a very famous part of the piece, because it's just, you know, at the core of the percussion and drums, and it's a very exciting, this whole passage is very exciting here.
I do want to play another selection, but we need to set it up a bit. And this is, again, from part two, The Sacrifice Ritual of the Ancients. And as you have been telling us in preparation for the show, that he really, this is Stravinsky, borrowed, if I can say, from Debussy's Nuages.
Well, that's great. You know, Stravinsky is one of the artists attributed with the expression, good artists borrow, great artists steal. Picasso is also attributed with it, which is perfectly good as well. This is really what Stravinsky is about. He, through his life, appropriated techniques of others and made them his own, you know, and that's a very important thing. Not imitation, not a lesser version, but always a better version. And so Debussy was very important to him from a pretty early age.
Were they friends?
Yeah, they knew each other. They would play together on the piano here and there. And Debussy wrote him some very encouraging words after hearing Petrushka. He wrote that one of the passages was unlike anything he had ever heard before in music. And so that was high praise, because Debussy, if we're going to continue the art analogy, he's very much like a Cézanne. He's like maybe the grandfather of the 20th century of modernity. He did things differently himself. And so Stravinsky was very inspired by what Debussy did. You know, just a couple of points on that.
Sure.
One is the emphasis on wind instruments. That was a new thing that Debussy did. The combination of very ancient scales with cutting-edge modern scales, and nothing in between, not the scales of Mozart and Haydn and Beethoven, but either the very ancient or the brand new, as you pointed out. And also this idea of just getting rid of transitions was actually a big thing. Debussy would compose in blocks of sound, and just kind of, you know, music before that would always transition organically in the narrative and the story. And this we can tie in with cubism and the abstraction happening at the time. And Stravinsky borrowed that idea and then took it to the nth degree with this piece. So he just switches from one moment to another. I think your previous guest used the term jump cuts, and I like that a lot. We're much more used to that today in our popular music and a lot of the things we listen to. But back then, absolutely revolutionary.
Well, again, this is an excerpt from the 1992 recording, the Cleveland Orchestra, conducted by Pierre Boulez, Ritual of the Ancients. So we should listen for, I guess, the English horn solo borrowed from Debussy.
Right. There's a great lift just straight from Debussy, his orchestra piece, Nuage, which means clouds. Right. And so it's very different in the Debussy, but you'll hear a very striking connection in the instrument solos and these English horn solos.
Let's listen.
Thank you.
This is Radio Times, and we're listening to selections from The Rite of Spring. And again, David Ludwig is our guest. Stravinsky conducted as well, yes?
Did he
conduct this?
He conducted this piece many, many times, and was not known perhaps for being, you know, the greatest technician in the world, greatest conductor. But I've known some musicians who played under him who says, who cares, it's Stravinsky, you know. He wrote a very interesting thing, actually, in the 20s when he was first making recordings of this, where he said, look, I've recorded this piece now, so who's going to debate the tempos and the sounds that I want? You can go and listen to this piece, and that's how I want it.
Wow.
And so he is kind of drawing a line in the sand for all future performances.
But it seems that others have taken some liberties with this, and rightfully so.
Yeah, absolutely. A piece of music is like a play, you know, and it needs to be interpreted, and it needs to live in many different people's hands as it is out in the world.
Well, we've been talking about some of the earthiness of all this. I ran across a quote from Robert Kraft, who was an assistant of Stravinsky's, calling the Rite here, and I'm quoting, the prize bull that inseminated the whole modern movement. Is that a little hyperbole, or do you think he's telling us something important?
It's pretty true, and it goes very much in line with a lot of the themes we've been talking about. Kraft was his amanuensis and basically his BFF later in life, a young conductor who really studied and apprenticed with Stravinsky and promoted him. And absolutely, it is that. It's a piece that has influenced composers forever after, very much like Beethoven's Ninth Symphony did for 19th century composers. Stravinsky's Rite of Spring does for 20th century composers.
And I would think even beyond classical composers, but jazz,
absolutely,
rock and roll.
Yeah, there's an incredible, wonderful cross-fertilization. Stravinsky was listening to jazz musicians in the Paris cafes of the 20s, and they were listening back. And so, you know, you can put on a Love Supreme by John Coltrane and listen to the beginning and say, you know, those chords sound like Debussy. They sound like Stravinsky. And then right back, Stravinsky wrote ragtimes and tangos and was very influenced by the very interesting rhythms and complexities of jazz. And then certainly a lot of bands and pop music has acknowledged this as being fundamental to them.
It has a kind of urban sound. And, of course, we're seeing the urbanization of so much of the world, you know, traffic honking, brakes screeching, all of that. You can almost hear that in Stravinsky.
Yeah, you absolutely can. It's all of these things. And in 1913, you know, you can imagine what it was like on the streets of Paris. And so I feel like, just to go back to an earlier point you made, he really captures that clash of the ancient and the modern and juxtaposes them in a just incredible way.
Well, he inspired you. David Ludwig. In fact, you have brought in, and we're going to play from your concerto for violin, cello, and orchestra, composed by you, inspired by Stravinsky?
Well, in part. You know, the opening is, I realize later, is very much Stravinskian, and that happens a lot as a composer. I remember hearing this piece for the first time when I was a teenager. And I grew up, I came from a musical family and grew up with very traditional classical music from the Baroque to the Romantic era. And to hear this piece was incredibly liberating. I mean, everything I thought I knew about music was absolutely turned on its head. And you'll hear that from a lot of composers. Mm-hmm. It's just made its way into the DNA of so many pieces.
But you didn't realize this until afterwards. I mean, it was working on you and on your unconscious, I guess.
Well, it's in our bones, and so we write our music as composers, and it just kind of comes out. You know, it's kind of a gateway piece, we could call it. You know, it's we're doing summer programs at Curtis for adults and teens, and in the young artist program. With the young composers, this is where we'll start. We'll start by looking at Stravinsky's Rite of Spring and seeing everything that came out of that afterwards.
Well, again, this is composed by our guest David Ludwig, a concerto for violin, cello, and orchestra. He wrote for violinist Jamie Laredo and cellist Sharon Robinson. Let's listen. ¶¶ Concerto for Violin, Cello, and Orchestra, composed by our guest David Ludwig, written for violinist Jamie Laredo and cellist Sharon Robinson. And we just spent an hour listening to Stravinsky, and I can hear him working on you in that piece.
Yeah, I'm totally. I listened to it, I thought, boy, I really did rip him off, didn't I? But I think a lot
borrowed,
of composers
steal,
have felt that
maybe
way.
You stole.
I'd rather
stole
it. Yeah. So.
Well, we're going to end this hour with the very end of The Rite of Spring. This is the sacrificial dance. And I wonder if you could just set us up. We're going to listen to about a minute and a half of the very end of The Rite of Spring.
Yeah, this is the very end of the piece. It is, the most motoric. It just kind of drives toward the end. And then this kind of ends the same way it started, just kind of in this ethereal place, just skips off and is over. But it's just an incredible ride until you get there.
Was Stravinsky proud of this piece? Do we know?
I think he was. I think he was proud of it. I think he was very aware of just what it meant to people. And at first, he was a little distraught at the first production. But in the long view, he died in 1971. And so he got to see this piece over 60 years develop and become truly a piece of standard repertoire.
Well, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times, talking about one of my favorite pieces of music.
Me too. It's been wonderful, Marty. Thank you.
You're very welcome. David Ludwig, composer, artistic chair of performance and composition at the Curtis Institute of Music, joining us in this very special hour of Radio Times as we celebrate the 100th anniversary of Igor Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. Heather Bromfield is our intern. The show is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscowen. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. And again, closing things out with The Rite of Spring, Sacrificial Dance.